When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100 megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Good afternoon. At the tone, Pacific Daylight Time will be...
It's 5 o'clock. 5 o'clock.
One step closer to my own personal hell.
This is Primetime on Sports Radio 1080 The Fan.
We expect the best. We're not afraid to break someone. Do you hear me?
Primetime is your source for the best in local, regional, and national sports.
Go ahead and clap. Mediocrity deserves applause.
Isaac Rodden.
I'm miserable. I had to get up at 10 o'clock this morning.
Jason Sakanic.
I'm a dude playing a dude disguised as another dude.
Primetime on 1080 The Fan.
All right. Hour number three, a Festivus edition of Primetime. Schultze, Ortner, and Buckley here with you, taking you into the final 2 hours of 1080 The Fan Radio here locally, at least for the next 3 days, because we will be off national programming Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, and the 26th. Everybody will be back on Friday, the 27th, including one Isaac Erop, who will be back in this chair on the 27th. Souk is back on the 30th. We, of course, have the Rose Bowl next week. That'll be well covered. We'll get deep into that game, I'm sure, in the shows to come. But we are wrapping up some Festivus thoughts here. Just came off of the in the news section, but I wanted to, before we get into the hot 5 of 5, just go a couple rapid fire airing of grievances that I have. And I don't know if you guys have any to add to the mix here. Very basic for me, not anything that needs to have a bunch of time spent on it. Mouth guards in football. My God, can we put them in our faces or just leave them out? I'm so tired of the dangling hood ornaments that are, like, there are guys that have 2 and 3 mouth guards hanging from their face mask now. Swag. There's the dude on the freaking Lions who has it sticking out of the top of his helmet.
Brian Branch.
I'm sorry. I know this is old man yelling at cloud here. They're not accessories. They're to protect your teeth and your tongue so you don't bite it off when you take a big hit. If you're not using it for that, leave it on the sideline, man. I don't care if you swallow your tongue. Just don't hang it out. Like, I don't want to hang it off your face.
We had a bunch of guys that would just chew gum during the games. They wouldn't wear the mouthpiece. And then we got this new special mouthpiece that, like, if you got hit too hard, it would trigger a sensor and it would tell them that they needed to look at you. So I broke the charger on purpose so that my charger would run out.
My other grievance, football related, when did we get to the point where every single first down, collegiate or professional, needs to be signaled by the player who achieved it? Yeah, they do the sniff, the sniff thing, the shaky, shaky, shake, and point over there, and like, dude, it's your job. If it's the touchdown, fine. If it's the game-sealing first down, or you picked up 4th and 13, fine. But you ran an out route on 2nd and 6, and you picked up 8, and you're doing a dance, man. Freddie Mitchell started this on like a 3rd and 27 for Philadelphia in the playoffs like years ago, and now, like, I've got a ref out there. He's pointing the first down. The graphic on my TV says first down. I know, man. You're just doing your job. What's happening?
He wants to be a meme. Wants to be trending on social media for doing a wicked cool dance.
But most of them aren't wicked cool. They're just like self-promoting, like, I caught the ball and I got this 7 yards. Congratulations, you're supposed to. Farrell Brown did it yesterday in the Seahawks game. I love Farrell Brown. He's an Oregon Duck. But my man, you've got 7 catches all year. Give the ball to the official. Go back and get another one.
Yeah, act like you've been there before.
I mean,
if you don't like how I celebrate, don't let me get the first down.
You know, actually, No, I think that's the way that's the argument that I side with here, because unfortunately I'm not for like pitchers getting pissed when a hitter pimps a home run in baseball.
Oh, I'm with you. I think that's all fine. I think people need to let that go. But that's a home run. If guys are doing it, like, and you know what?
Like on a base hit.
For that matter, the Dodgers doing their Mickey Mouse crap and their hip swivels every time they get a walk or something like that.
That is a new thing in baseball. It's not just the Dodgers. There's like a team thing every time you get on base.
Motion to your dugout or whatever.
What are you doing? I agree with that.
I like the players doing their own thing. I like players wearing their signature sneakers and their different colors and like whatever. You can have your dumb little sliding mitts. I don't care. But like this whole like let me celebrate over the top for just something that is like part of my routine job. Like I'm gonna start doing a dance every time I get my SportsCenter update bed right or something. You know, it's a
Did a good sports update, you guys. Hey, I nailed it.
Any grievances for you fellas?
Will, you go first. I got one quick one after you.
I would like my Twitter to go back to normal. We were talking about this in the break. My entire Twitter is the two British girls, and if you don't know what I'm talking about, you're not on Twitter. I'd like that to please stop now. And then I'd also like it to stop being people commenting on Travis Hunter and his girlfriend or fiance, whatever she is. She seems lovely. I don't know anything about them. Neither do you.
Exactly.
You shouldn't be commenting on their relationship. Whatever issues you might have with it, make sure that your significant other doesn't engage in those activities that you have issues with. I just think it's stupid.
Yeah, there are a lot of, here's what you should be doing, Travis Hunter. I think Travis Hunter can figure out what Travis Hunter should be doing on his own.
There's a lot of dudes either in unhappy relationships or not in relationships that are trying to tell a 21-year-old how they're supposed to behave in their relationship or how their girlfriend is supposed to behave in their relationship. And frankly, I think that's sad, and it's not sad for Travis or his fiance.
No. Schultzy, what you got?
He does not need any advice from nobody, especially on Twitter. My sports grievance is teams that, basically, this is a thing in all sports now, teams that allow their players to wear non-team colors when they're in the game. So, like, for instance, I'm seeing New York Yankees players wearing all kinds of teal. Dame, he wears red shoes playing for the Milwaukee Bucks, and there's a ton of players now that all over the NBA and Major League Baseball are allowed to do this now. It looks like crap. It looks weird when you're playing against a team that has yellow in their jersey, and you've got yellow in your shoes. It makes no sense to me. I just can't handle it with my brain, and then already trying to like follow the new way of the NBA where the white jerseys, which used to be home, are now the away jerseys like it is in the NFL because of all the 10 jerseys that are available to choose from each night. So please just get back to the rule where you have to match your team colors, please.
I don't mind that. I mean, it's weird when like the first one for me that like pops out is like Marcelo Zuna, the guy that's like wearing like a fluorescent highlighter yellow arm sleeve when he's like playing for the red, white, and blue Braves. And I'm like, frankly, I think it would look better if you did it other ways, but who am I to tell someone else how to peacock? It's not my business. I guess it's theirs. I don't disagree, Schultzy. Sometimes it looks rather ridiculous, but then again, this is the era of self-promotion, so here we are. My last one, and I could spend a lot more time on this. I think we all could. I want four Blazers fans. I'm not even a Blazers fan. I just want them to like pick a direction and commit to it. Maybe let that commitment just be to tanking. I feel like they're constantly in this purgatory of like, we're really bad, but we're not so bad that we might turn into really good. It just feels like they're stuck in the mud, and I feel bad for the people that are along there with them. That's about all I got. How about the hot 5 out of 5?
Oh. Hot topics, hot opinions.
Oh, golly, I'm hot today.
And hot air. It's time for the Hot 5 at 5.
That's hot.
The Hot 5 at 5 on Primetime with Isaac and Sue.
No, I mean it. That's very hot.
The Hot 5 at 5 with Isaac and Sue. Brought to you on The Fan by Victorico's Mexican Food. Discover Victorico's new savory menu items. Order in-store, online, or get it delivered straight to your door at victorico's.com. Number 5.
Number 5, the Blazers back in action tonight. They are visiting the Dallas Mavericks. They are coming off of a loss to the San Antonio Spurs. And Schultz, you had a health update on those Blazers?
Right now, at this point, Robert Williams III and Delano Banton are questionable. And that was actually an update from yesterday. Williams III was not added until to the injury report until today.
Gotcha. So they go, they tip off, I believe, 5:30 for that one. And they're sitting at 9-19 right now. They're bad, but in my opinion, they're not bad enough.
I want to continue to see some growth from Shaden. I want to see some growth. Obviously, Klingon is working his way back from injury. But continue to suck, but grow while you... No, that's wrong.
What?
I am so glad
you stopped yourself
Show
there.
Growth in your game.
My...
Merry Christmas all.
Goodness, that was...
Suck, but not as bad.
Yeah, there you go.
Twitter on my mind.
Next.
Number four.
Number four, how about a little college hoops action? The Oregon Ducks improving to 11-1 on the season. They also move up another spot in the rankings. They're now at number nine on that 11-1 spot with 970 first place votes. Also, the Beavs are off to their best start in a really long time. I read today the Beavs are 11-0 against the spread this season, Will.
Ooh, maybe time to start hammering some college basketball.
The Tinklers got things going in Corvallis. I haven't taken a really close look at the schedule, but nice to see them continuing to be successful despite all the realignment stuff that's happened and some of the defections that they have faced. Oregon playing Weber State this week. That is their next game. They play that on the 29th, so a couple days after Christmas for the Ducks. They got some time off right now.
Ooh, there you go. The Beavs get the Pilots here next week.
Oh.
I believe it's next Monday. So get ready for some hot
Here's
WCC
the situation.
Action.
We WCC. Think.
Are you going to be producing that?
Of course.
Hell yeah. That's what I like.
Where would you expect me to be? I'm basically like Number second three. Mr. Pilot.
We got bowl games today. We had UTSA beat the ever-living crap out of Coastal Carolina today in the... something early in the day bowl.
The Myrtle Beach Bowl.
There you go. So Coastal Carolina hosts that, don't they?
I believe so, yeah.
Or they're like de facto hosts, or they get invited to it because they're close and their fans are too?
Well, and they're actually going to show up.
Yeah.
Because that bowl is always going to be like a bunch of basically 500 lower tier group of five teams.
And it's 2 days before Christmas, and not a lot of people are going to travel for that,
right,
et cetera, et cetera. And then you got a game that was absolutely miserable for an underbetter like myself. 41 was the total on Northern Illinois and Fresno State.
Yeah.
They were deadlocked at 13 apiece for just 26 points at the end of regulation, but both teams had to score a touchdown in overtime and then another one in double. So the over busted, and NIU wins the bowl game over Fresno State. Their coach, after the game, got the bucket of French fries poured on him for the famous Idaho Potato Bowl. He said it was the best dump he'd ever had.
Well, wow. I would have thought that when he beat Notre Dame in Notre Dame, that would have been the best.
He was talking specifically about the, I guess the contents of it, but the way it came out, he said, that's one of the best dumps I've ever had, all salty with French fries and stuff.
Well, as someone,
not great.
As someone who almost just stepped in it and was barely able to catch themselves right before they did, I think that we should go easy on NIU's head football coach and that sometimes mistakes happen when we are speaking words.
We will get more bowl games the day at, well, actually, I think we have one more tomorrow. It's the one in Hawaii, and we get San Jose State as well. Or that they're the one in Hawaii. But what we get now in the NFL coming up on Christmas, we get a couple of games. We have Monday Night Football this evening between the Packers and the Saints. Two games on Christmas. You've got the Chiefs, the Steelers in one, and you've got the Texans and Ravens in the other one. But the Seahawks lose yesterday. They're now a game back in the division. That's really their only hope of making the playoffs. Even though they have two games left, they are two games out in the wild card. So they've got to overcome the Rams, which probably means them beating the Rams in the final week and also having Rams lose them win. It's going to be a tough sledding, so to speak.
Yeah, well, the real issue is that you lost to the Giants. You had the Giants at home, and they hadn't had a lead. In Thanksgiving, they got their first lead for the first time since that game. You blew a game to the Giants. You also blew a game to the Rams earlier on in the year that you should have won.
Yeah.
And then you blew this one to Minnesota. So, look, the Seahawks have no one to blame but themselves for not making the playoffs. Lane Kiffin, that's how that's done. When you take ownership of your own team's mistakes.
You hear that, Lane? Will wants you to be accountable.
I'm sure you're locked in on our show right now down in Mississippi.
And number one, of course, is the college football playoff first round results. Not so much those games, but the setting up of the four quarterfinal games, including the number one seeded Oregon Ducks taking on Ohio State in the Rose Bowl. That comes your way. It's the middle game on New Year's Day. We are geeked about it. People talking about the winner of that game being the national title winner. You agree with that?
Yeah, I really do think that you're probably going to see the winner of this game end up being the national champion, barring some sort of big injury, right? Like if a Will Howard goes down, if a Dylan Gabriel goes down in this game, Smith goes down, you know, something of that nature, then okay, it might be someone else. But I think when you look at this game, there's a lot of complaints right now from Oregon fans of, well, why do we have to play basically the second best team in the country so early? My response to that would be, this is going to be the healthiest that you are possibly going to be. This might be the best time to take them on. And they're dealing with some extra injuries of their own. So if I'm Oregon, there's a glass half full way to look at it, glass half empty. And I think the best thing for your sanity right now is look at it glass half full, especially if you win. And then if you lose, then you can come back and have your complaints. Lane Kiffin has done a great job of that. You can do that as well.
Yeah, ask yourself what Dan Lanning would do. We've asked him before on this program about the path, about the difficulty. That guy refuses to make excuses, only looks at the positive, mm-hmm. and what an opportunity for the Oregon Ducks. We'll talk plenty more about that game coming up towards the end of this week and the beginning of next, but the Hot 5 of 5 is brought to you by Victorico's Mexican Food, a hit with the whole family. Order in-store, online, or delivered to your door at victorico's.com. When you think flavor, think Victorico's. Our Festivus celebration needs to continue. We have put to bed most of our grievances. If you have others, you can still share them with us on the fan text line, 503-864-6326. But coming up next, our feats of strength can be from the weekend that was. I've got one from there, but also the sports year, the entire sports 2024 calendar. What were the feats of strength that improved you in sports the most? We'll get Will and Schultz's thoughts as well as yours. That's coming up next. Primetime, 1080 The Fan.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Fantasy freaks and geeks, it's James Kell from the Sleeper King Football Podcast. We all know sleepers can win you championships, but finding these guys takes time. That's where the Sleeper King comes in. Let me do all the research so you don't have to. Every week, I'm going to break down which sleepers you need to pick up off the waiver wire and which surprise deep sleepers could help you win the week. Every episode, just 15 to 20 minutes long, every Tuesday through Friday. Subscribe to the Sleeper King Football Podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your pods.
Welcome back to Primetime, a Festivus edition. We've aired most of our grievances. I don't think we have too many of them left. And now we call upon you, the listeners, to join us and share some of your feats of strength of the year. They could be your own feats of strength. They could be feats of strength that you saw over this football weekend. They could be feats of strength from the last 12 calendar months. Really anything goes here on this Festivus edition. I will start with one feat of strength. And I think that maybe it's on a more of a technicality that we can call it a strength, because it's more of a flex than it is a strength. Mm. Did you see this over the weekend, Will? The trick play from the Detroit Lions against the Chicago Bears?
The fake fumble?
Yeah. What a flex. And now, if you don't know what we're talking about, there was a play in which Jared Goff went back like he was going to hand the ball off, and he threw, and basically he stumbles as he goes through this play fake. But that's just what it is. It's not a stumble. It's a play fake. It's meant to look like an accident. The running back falls down. Goff almost falls down and then gets up and uncorks a touchdown pass deep downfield. It wasn't an accident. They saw on film that when the Packers played the Bears and the Packers had a real fumble and a real broken play, mm-hmm. that it worked like a charm against a confused Bears defense. So the Lions faked having a fumble and a broken play to confuse the Bears and take advantage of their defense. It was genius. It was a flex. It's kind of a stunt. It's kind of embarrassing to like be like, hey, this is what we're going to do. I mean, I absolutely love the genius of it. Then you could see Goff showing Dan Campbell the iPad on the side of the touch surface on the sideline, being like, look at my fake, look how good it was here. Campbell loving it. They're just smoking the Bears and like laughing about it. Incredible. I don't know if you want to call it a feat of strength, but just a amazing X's and O's flex, I thought.
I think it's also a possibility of Ben Johnson kind of setting it all out on the table to the Bears and being like, if you want it, pay up, come get it. Because the Bears have to pair someone offensive-minded with Caleb Williams. And right now, who's a better available option? You know, like, I think there's an argument to be made that after what Canales has done or what O'Connell has done with the different quarterbacks that they've had, right, like, Canales, Bryce Young looks good. Like, he has completely changed that quarterback's career. You go and look at his track record as well, because you can throw Baker Mayfield's resurgence. You can throw Geno Smith's resurgence on his resume. Mm-hmm. You look at O'Connell. O'Connell made Kirk Cousins work. He's made Sam Darnold work. That probably means he's going to make J.J. McCarthy work. The problem is they already have head jobs. So you're going to have to go find an OC. Is there a better option right now than Ben Johnson?
No.
I don't think there is.
I don't think so. And yeah, it does feel like he is going to be priority number one for really anybody that has an opening. I'm not sure how many openings he'll be interested in, and that's the nice thing about the position he's in. He had the chance to go pretty much wherever he wanted last year. Didn't like the way things looked. One more year back in Detroit, and now he's going to have his pick of the litter once again. A great text coming in on the fan text line of feats of strength this season. Said, my wife kicked breast cancer's ass this year. Shout out to all the women who have gone through it. That is a feat of strength, and that is something we love to hear. Congratulations to her and to your whole family. That's outstanding. What about you guys? Things either from the weekend or just the year that was, feats of strength that impressed you?
I'd say Paul Feinbaum was very impressive this year on how much of the water for the SEC he was able to carry. Like, I mean, he usually goes out there and puts on a pretty good performance. But for Paul, usually when he's putting on his performance, he's arguing for Georgia. He's arguing for Alabama to be in the college football playoff. And they're elite teams, or at the very least, they're deserving of that fourth spot. Like last year, Alabama, not an elite team, but did they deserve that fourth spot? Yeah, I think they did, honestly. And that's no offense to Florida State. You just had an injury issue. But this year, going out as soon as LSU loses, well, LSU's a middle of the road SEC team. USC isn't even that good. Oh, how can you not talk about Ole Miss or Alabama or South Carolina? They would go to a neutral field and wipe the floor with Indiana. So I just thought it was very impressive from such a slender man, an older man as well, that he was able to put so much weight on his back with all the water that he was carrying to hopefully get the SEC into the college football playoff.
Schultze, what do you got? Any feats of strength that impressed you?
I'm kind of going maybe a little bit under the radar here, and that would be I've got to give Caitlin Clark some props.
Okay.
The feat of strength that she has shown dealing with, I don't even know what
to call it. A bunch of jack wagons?
Yeah, I don't even know what to call it at this point. I mean, being called racist, being called so many things.
Caitlin Clark is white!
I mean, just so many people that have basically just thrown daggers at her for seemingly no reason other than, like, she's
for being a female Steph Curry.
Yeah, the new young like female talent in the WNBA, but because she supposedly doesn't look how some people want her to look or sound how some people want her to sound, that maybe brings issues. So I got to say, man, she's getting it not only from people in the WNBA, but fans, other sports pundits that don't know what the hell they're talking about. So props to her. She's still what, like 23, 24?
Yeah.
That is incredible maturity that she is showing, just being able to handle all of this like she's handled. And you know, I haven't seen her really break down at all in public. She's never seemed to not have like the perfect quote or the perfect thing to say or the perfect response ready for a reporter in a public situation. So huge props to her. That is a definite feat of strength for this year.
The other thing that I don't think people acknowledge or give credit to is that in addition to her basically just like rewriting all the record books in college and having this incredible run that took them all the way to the championship game. Was it championship or Final Four?
They did. She took her team to two championship games.
And so, but it's unlike the way that the WNBA schedule works. It's completely unlike the college guys and the NBA draft. Their draft is like right after, and then their season starts right away. So you go from a full college season to a full WNBA season, one in which she had a target on her back against just about everybody she played, and she went out and set a bunch of rookie records, and she went and like led the league in assists despite like some of the old heads not wanting it to be that way. I'm with you, Schultzy. I thought that was an excellent feat of strength.
Not to air an extra grievance.
Go ahead. That's what Festivus is for.
Can we just have a sports conversation?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, sports are supposed to be an escape, and it felt like at times with the Caitlin Clark situation, whichever side you wanted to end up on, because it felt like there were nonsense arguments with a lot of people, it took the WNBA finally getting some recognition that it deserved, and it felt like it became political every single time that a WNBA game, specifically a Caitlin Clark game, came on. And it's like, I just want to watch a basketball game, man. Yeah. It's the summer. Please just let me watch and enjoy. Can we get to the dumb arguments of sports? Of like, well, why isn't her teammate helping and pick her up? Or why did she take that shot? Or why didn't she take this? Or, oh, she's awesome, but is she better than this person? Or is she better than that person? Like, can we just please let sports be an escape?
And just appreciate what's in front of us. Agreed. So there was a sports figure, and I will have to look up who it was, that said that sports are the toy department of life and we should treat it as such.
That is Tom Looney. Sports broadcasting is the toy department of
life,
essentially.
And I think it could just be extended to sports in general. There's so much serious stuff that goes on that we have to deal with. We don't need to turn everything into a fight. We don't need to make everything polarizing. We can just watch some ball, and that'll be okay. One of the feats of strength coming in on the fan text line, a good feat of strength, is Saquon Barkley jumping backwards over that dude.
Yeah.
That was pretty amazing.
That might have been a feat of athleticism.
Yeah. Well, strength in those quads. But I will say this. And it pains me as a Giants fan to say it, but holy Shohei Ohtani going 50-50 this year.
Yeah.
And not just being the first player ever to go 50-50, but the game that he did it, where he went like 6-for-6 or 7-for-7 with the cycle and three home runs.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know that I've ever seen a baseball game like that or a single individual performance like that to be the cherry on top of an already ridiculously dominant season. I mean, the home runs maybe not, but he probably could have gotten to 60 steals if he wanted to. Like, it was an unbelievable year for a guy that really didn't even have to do all of that. That team was so good, you could kind of coast into the postseason, but again, pains me as a Giants fan. I love the kind of athlete that he is. I love the attitude that he has. He just goes, like, he's very workmanlike. He just goes about his business. He cares. He has fun with it. He seems to be a showman as well. I am here for all of what Ohtani's selling.
Yeah, I think it's cool to see a player like Ohtani just be like, you know what I'm going to try? Stealing bases this year.
Yeah.
He's never tried to steal bases. He's like, I think I'd be pretty good at it. Let's see if I can get this done. Now, it does help him, the offensive lineup that he is in, right? Like, he actually gets protected, which is a weird thing to say for Ohtani, but the lineup is just so deep. It's why I'm not even a Giants fan. It just bothered me that the Dodgers won because they bought it. And then I had to hear half my family be like, look at what we did. How are your Seattle Mariners doing? It's like, whatever.
Let's get to more of your feats of strength for this Festivus special. I've got a couple more in my back pocket. I think Schultze and Ortner do as well. We'll get to those on the other side. And then we also need to pay a little homage to someone we lost over the weekend, the Man of Steel, Ricky Henderson, a legend of the game, a legend of the clubhouse. Some great stories about him. More feats of strength and a little Ricky Henderson tribute that's coming up on Primetime. But here's Schultze with the SportsCenter update. Welcome back to a Festivus edition of Primetime. As former fat kid Will Ortner stuffs his face with cookies.
It's a problem.
Yummy.
They're very good. Thank you, whoever brought them.
Yeah. Are they frosted?
These cookies are not. These are like a peanut butter oat.
There's some M&M
situation going on.
It's very yummy.
Yes, you are. You're enjoying. We are getting some comments from the text line. One person asking, can we get the guys working more than a third of the year on the station this year?
Crazy.
No. I mean,
absolutely not.
The hay is in the barn on this. We're at year like 19 of them or something like that. 18, 19. I can't even keep track at this point. But if you know one, Isaac Everett Ropp, he has been advocating for a shorter work week, less work, fewer days, fewer hours. So you think they're going to start working more? Don't hold your breath.
He's the originator of the 4-day work week, at least in my life.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, if you've been listening to this station since you were a wee lad, yes, you would have heard Isaac stumping and advocating that for that for a very long time. A couple more feats of strength to get into from the sports year. Could be this last weekend, could be anything that's happened. One more that stood out for me, and this one is kind of a, I guess it would have been more of a personal one, except he was doing it for all of the United States of America this time around. How about Steph Curry going night-night in the Olympics?
That was awesome.
That was some really great theater. It seemed like that team was loaded for bear and they were going to roll through everybody. But every time that we say that that's going to happen, there's some scares that pop up. And he played like crap the first couple games in that tournament. And then he put the team on his back the last couple, including the final game with that ridiculous three over Wembanyama and the double team and making the whole night-night thing an international celebration for that transcended other sports. You saw football players doing it, basketball players doing it, soccer players doing it. A really cool moment just that galvanized, I thought, the whole like basketball country, the United States. And for somebody that people have complained a ton about, oh, I hate the way he chooses mouth guard and all the like all this stuff. Everybody was on Team Curry for that game against Serbia, and I loved every minute of it.
I feel like it was one of the rare times, too, in sports where you can look at an athlete, or in this case, three athletes, and go, this is the last time.
Yeah.
This is our last run. This is our last chance to see them at relatively the peak of their powers. And I know that they're not, it's not prime Curry, it's not prime KD, it's not prime LeBron James, but this was really your last opportunity to see that type of basketball greatness.
Yeah.
And there isn't a clear passing of the torch. Like, again, not alive for a decent chunk of this, but it always felt like Magic and Larry were able to pass it to MJ, who was able to pass it to Kobe, who was able to pass it to LeBron. There's not that person now. There isn't that next, hey, well, LeBron can pass it to KD or KD will pass it to because they're all the same era. So, who do you make that next pass to?
And I think we've been waiting for who that's going to be to step up for that spot. And it's like some people have said it would be Luka or that it would be Jason Tatum or that it would be
John Morant?
Zion.
Zion. Yes.
You want to talk about feats of strength? His legs carrying him.
Ant Edwards is a guy that people were thinking might be able to do some of that. But you're right. There's not really a clear heir apparent. And I think it might even be Curry's profile picture still from that Olympics. It's him and LeBron and KD with their gold medals. And I look at that photo and I'm like, probably the best basketball player ever, probably the best scorer ever, and probably the best shooter ever, all going to be leaving the game around the same time. That's probably going to be before the next Olympic cycle. So really cool to see those guys pull that off and to see Curry go night-night all around the world. What else do you guys have on your feats of strength this year?
Schultze, why don't you jump in?
Yeah, I got a good one. Since it's pretty much all negative talk about my Mariners, I do have to give props to their stud catcher, Cal Raleigh.
Yeah, the dumper.
He is one of the leaders, I think, if not at the top of all catchers in home runs in the last 3 to 4 seasons that he's been in the majors. He won the Gold Glove. He won the Platinum Glove Award, which, if you don't know what that is, it's essentially all of the people that won Gold Gloves. Then one of them gets picked as the best overall defender of everybody of those. And Cal Raleigh won that. So not only that, he is one of the best defensive pitchers, or excuse me, catchers, not just behind the plate, but throwing runners out. Mm-hmm. He, I think, only had 10 times where people stole a base on him this season. And I just was always happy to watch that consistent performance from him. Was his average high? No, but the overall average in Major League Baseball is down. I don't care so much about that, especially when you are a team leader offering me 30-plus home runs, near 100 RBIs, and Cal did that once again this season. I believe it was the first year. He eclipsed 100 RBIs, so Cal Raleigh, feet of strength, basically putting the Mariners team on his back at times.
Yeah, he's been awesome. He's done some really special things, whether it's homering from both sides of the plate in the same game, or like, and there's just, there's a lot that he brings. He's a really nice cornerstone piece for that organization, and often a beacon when it seems like they don't have one. A really great thought, a literal and figurative feat of strength from the text line. Derek Harmon's strip fumble against Ohio State. Early in the game, the Ducks didn't get their, if you remember correctly, they didn't get an interception when they should have had one on the first possession. Ohio State ends up getting a touchdown. Ducks turn or have to punt the ball away on their first possession, and Ohio State's about ready to drive again until big Derek Harmon comes in and just strips the ball from the running back in the backfield, a move that I really haven't seen before, and people couldn't believe it at first. It wasn't even called a change of possession because they didn't realize what had happened, but yeah, he just said, give me that, and that was a huge change of momentum in that game. If they don't come up with that, I'm not sure that they win that football game.
It's probably the most impressive play from a defensive lineman since Jadeveon Clowney against Michigan, where he just blows up the Michigan running back. The ball hits the ground. He just picks it up and starts walking over him. It's one of the more improbable and crazy plays, I think, that we've seen. I don't know about in like our lifetime, but basically it's a once in a decade play. You see it about once in a decade. It's been about a decade since
I can't remember
Clowney
ever seeing anyone. Well, in Clowney, as people, I think even you have pointed out, like, there was a missed block, a broken play, like it all kind of set up to be this great highlight reel play, but it wasn't nearly maybe as impressive as what Harmon did, shedding blockers and, and
he defeated a double team.
Yeah.
He defeated a double team in the play and was still able to get in the backfield fast enough to basically take the ball out of the running back's hands and still add some insult to injury. So that was one of the more impressive things for me. Another impressive feat of strength, I think, has been just Taylor Swift's ability to lead the Chiefs to what looks like to be back-to-back Super Bowls. I mean, without her, where would this team really be? I mean, before she got into the picture, Andy Reid only had one Super Bowl. Travis Kelce had stupid hair. And
she's galvanized this team.
Show. Without Taylor Swift being in her Chiefs football era, would we really be where we're at today?
Hard to know. And is she responsible for some of that refereeing voodoo that everyone else thinks is going on? Because if you ask certain people in certain NFL circles, the Chiefs get all the breaks. They get all
That's
the calls.
Right.
They get all the luck. I mean, does Taylor have something to do with it?
Taylor Swift, that
That's my that might be my favorite rop drop.
They all got like free Tay-Tay tickets or something.
Ooh.
Oh, dear.
There's your tinfoil hat Taylor conspiracy for you.
Another feat of strength that, I mean, it's a little bit broader than just the Harmon one, but how about the Ducks being the only team to go undefeated the entire college football season? I mean, they may not, I'm not trying to like, I guess, pre-hedge this out and say, oh, they might not beat Ohio State, but they've still had a great season. Like, I'm not trying to be conciliatory or just, like, count consolation packages before the big games have happened, but even if Oregon does not end up with the title at the end of this run, they're the only team that ran the gauntlet and went undefeated in their season. They're the only team that went 8 straight weeks in a power conference without a bye. Mm-hmm. They did it with an awesome game in one of the most highly anticipated matchups of this new Big Ten conference with the Ohio State game at Autzen Stadium. They survived a grinder in Wisconsin. They got revenge on the Huskies that Dan Lanning desperately needed. They go win the Big Ten title game in their first year. I mean, there have been a lot of strengths just for the Ducks and the Ducks program. Even within that, I feel like giving a nod to Bryce Betcher, winning a national gold glove, and then being like an all-world linebacker this year, winning the Burlsworth Award for the best walk-on-turned-scholarship player as a senior. And then It's a little bit of a weird one, but I got to give a little feat of strength to the Ducks video team this year.
You might not like
everything that Dan Lanning has brewing, and if you're a Beavers fan or a Huskies fan or just a fan of somebody else and you don't like your head coach that much, some of the Dan Lanning stuff could probably get pretty nauseating, all the messaging and the mantras and the ways that they hype up games. But one, it's clearly something that gets his team's attention, and two, it's something that we talk about every single week, and it's not just the messaging to the team. The way that this video team has started all the way back in summer with this team out west, and it even goes back to last year with Ducks versus them, they have been giving us mini documentaries every week of the season along the way. They're always brilliantly edited. They're always catchy. They're always entertaining, exciting. Like, they are giving Duck fans a look at the program that we've kind of never had before, and I think that's been awesome.
They do it at a high level too, because it's quick turnarounds.
Yeah.
Obviously they're a little bit shorter than like a Hard Knocks episode, but they give a similar feel. But at the same time, they don't give anything away, so you know Lanning still kind of loves it.
Yeah.
And it's also an understanding too of how the game works. Guess who sees that, who also thinks it's cool?
Recruits. Players. Yeah.
4 stars, 5 stars. It's a big deal. And so when you get that type of exposure for your program, it can only be helpful.
It's literally free advertising.
Yeah.
Because I'm seeing, and it's not just PNW people, it's 5 million views plus on Twitter nationally. People are watching that. 18-year-olds are watching. They'd be like, yo, you seen Oregon?
I mean, there was a time during the year, there was like a 3-week stretch that it felt like all anybody could talk about was what Dan Lanning was using for the motivation.
Yeah.
They had the whole gladiator thing in at the big house in Michigan with the thumbs down. And like, that was, I mean, I was getting like alerts from Yahoo Sports and ESPN after that came out about what the Ducks had done and like taking the time out to watch the other team leave. And like, it doesn't have to be your thing, but it's absolutely captivated people. And if you're trying to build a program, that's a hell of a way to do it. Well, there's a little bit of time left before we careen into the club. We will get to Tis the Season to Beat Up Your Dad, some Christmas traditions, and the best foods in the world. But before that, we have to pay a little homage to the man of steel, Ricky Henderson, gone too soon, a legend of the game. Some of our favorite stories coming up next as we wrap up the Sports Hour of Primetime, 1080 The Fan.
It's time for a Ducks Report, the inside story on Oregon athletics, brought to you by Mods PDX. The future of building is here.
I think we've all been looking forward to this one and for you know, another crack of these guys. And, you know, I was, the way that last one ended doesn't sit right with me. It still doesn't. This still bugs me. And, you know, I'm just thankful for the opportunity that, you know, we get another crack at them. And in life, you know, I said this before the game, in life you don't get a lot of second chances, man. So the fact that we're getting a second chance here, man, is you know, a blessing from the Lord. And, you know, we're gonna go out there and have some fun and let it rip, man, because, you know, this is all we got. It's win or go home.
That is Will Howard, quarterback of the Ohio State Buckeyes, talking about the rematch with the Ducks. He played great in the first one. He played great in their last game against Tennessee. I'm not thrilled about seeing him again, but that's what the Ducks have in front of them in the Rose Bowl.
It's the most exciting game, I think, of the college football season, and I agree with Colin Cowherd on this one. This is going to be the highest-rated non-national championship game in probably the 21st century.
Mods PDX, the future of building, and Will Eating Cookies is here. Welcome back to Primetime. I didn't want to believe it when I saw the news on Saturday because it just felt like it was way, way too soon. But it was true. Ricky Henderson, the man of steel, all-time stolen bases leader in Major League Baseball history, passed away at the age of 65 this weekend. And that was a surprise to a lot of people who knew him. And I'm certainly not one of those, but I grew up watching Ricky. He was right in my wheelhouse as a young baseball fan. I went to games at the Coliseum starting in like 88, 89, right around the time that he got there. And it was a different kind of experience. I mean, I think that us as sports fans, you remember some of the times in which like your parent or your uncle or your grandpa or your mom or dad like pulled you aside and like wanted you to identify that athlete. Like, watch what that guy does. He's different than the rest of them. I remember the first game I went to that my grandpa had me watch, Kirby Puckett and Ricky Henderson. There, it was a Twins A's game at the Coliseum, like a day game. And my grandpa pointed out Kirby. He's like, who do you think the best player on that team is? And he's like, it's actually that short, chubby guy over there. You wouldn't believe it, but like, he's the best.
Yeah.
And Kirby hit a home run that day. And then he pointed out Ricky Henderson. And like, he goes, when he got on base, he goes, don't watch the pitcher. Don't watch the batter. Just watch him. And I'm like, what? They're like, and my grandma's like, yeah, he's right. He's going to run. I bet it was only 3 pitches before he runs and steals second base. And like, sure enough, that's exactly how it was. He was one of those guys that was so good at what he was doing that other people, the whole ballpark, could know what was going to happen, and they still couldn't stop it. He was that kind of an athlete. And then on top of it, you had the aura and the swagger. And back in the day before we had Amazon, and he had these like neon green Mizuno batting gloves that he wore on the bases, and you couldn't get them anywhere. And so if you had a friend that had some, it was like the coolest thing ever. And he was a guy who was just, he was a titan of the game. He was really unique. There's tons of legendary stories about him. And that's the fun part, is that he seems like one of those final athletes that was retired before we got all the hyper coverage of social media and videos about everything, that you just, he's one of those guys you hear things about. And some of them you wonder if they're true. So, some of them definitely aren't, but some of them are, and they're remarkable. So I know that I asked you guys to kind of dig around and see what you found about Ricky that stood out. But one of the ones that I loved is, and this is a true story, it's been confirmed by the A's, that when Ricky got his first $1 million paycheck, much like a business that wants to frame the first dollar bill that they made, Ricky wanted it as a keepsake. What he didn't know was that, or just didn't care, was that he could cash that check and still keep the physical check. It didn't have to like go away. But he kept that $1 million check uncashed on his wall, framed, and years later, the A's are trying to balance their books, and they're like, why are we off by $1 million still? And they realized Ricky had not cashed his first $1 million check because it was like his keepsake on his wall, and he did stuff like that all the time.
Well, and that's what's funny to me about Ricky Henderson, because obviously I missed Ricky. Like, I'm too young. I could make a dumb, like, Seattle Mariner great Ricky Henderson joke here. I'm going to stay away from it. But Ricky kind of falls into that Bo Jackson kind of aura for me, of like, there are all these stories, and it's almost like the last great like folk hero. What's true and what's not true about Ricky? What's not true and what is true about Bo? Because they hit that perfect time of no one really thinks that they were on steroids. No one thinks that they were juicing, but they're late enough to where all of their major accomplishments are filmed, so you can see it. You can go back and watch their big games. You can watch Bo at Auburn. You can watch Ricky playing for the A's. You can watch him playing for the Mets. You can watch him playing for the Mariners. But they don't fall into the steroid era. There's no worry like, oh, were they juiced up? Were they doing this? Were they doing that? And then they're also not around long enough, at least playing-wise, for the Twitter, social media, that whole thing. So then
gone before that was a thing.
Right. So there's this last little aura around them of like, what is true, what is not. And I think the one that's always going to stand out to me, and for some reason I'm sure that this isn't true, because I always go back and forth between the two stories, but the one that I think of is someone asked Ricky about Austin 316. Stone Cold Steve Austin.
It was even before that, because Steve Austin wasn't a thing yet. This was when people would just bring John 316, the actual Bible verse, to the stadium. No, but you're right on the story, though, is that people...
So they bring the 316, and someone asked Ricky about it, and Ricky was like, why would Ricky care about John 316? Ricky's hitting 330.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a hilarious line. And if it's real in the fact of like he knew what John 3:16 was, he was just smart enough to have this joke, it's hilarious. If he's dumb and he didn't know what John 3:16 was and was just like, whatever, I'm hitting 330, go away from me, it's even funnier.
There's a bit of that, like he had a little Yogi Berra in him. Like, there, I mean, you talked about players juicing and players not. He was asked about the Ken Caminiti quote that approximately 50% of major league players are juicing. He goes, well, Ricky's not juicing, so that makes 49 right there.
Right.
And it's like, what? Doesn't exactly.
Not quite the answer. Okay there.
But he also, and I watched this clip. It was so good. There's a clip of Harold Reynolds, and I think the most credible stories about Ricky are the ones from other ballplayers who are around him. There's a great one from JT Snow that said the pitcher threw over to try to hold him on first a couple times, and Ricky tells him, he goes, tell the pitcher not to throw over here. Ricky ain't going anywhere. Ricky tired today. And then he gets up. His next at bat, he hits a home run, and his next at bat, he hits a double. And then he gets on first base again, and they start throwing over. He goes, I told you, Ricky's tired. I ain't going anywhere today. And it's like, but dude, you're hitting home runs and like
he's
whatever.
Trying to hit home runs so he doesn't have to run the bases.
But there's a story that Harold Reynolds tells, and Ricky did talk in third person all the time, which you might find to be obnoxious, but it's somehow now endearing and kind of badass. But there was a year, and I don't have the year, but where Ricky Henderson got injured and didn't put up many stats. He only played about a third of the season. And Harold Reynolds won the stolen base title that season. And he said it was down to him and one other player, and they were both sitting at 59 stolen bases on the final day of the season, which, I mean, 59 stolen bases, still a lot.
Pretty good. Yeah.
And Reynolds got his 60th, and whoever he was going up against went 0 for 5 that day, didn't reach base. And he said the next day, he gets a call on his phone, it's no caller ID, whatever, and he picks it up, and the voice says, "Hey, you're talking to Henderson." And it was Ricky calling to congratulate him, or so Harold thought, and Harold goes, "Oh, hey, what's going on, Ricky? How are you?" He goes, "You ought to be ashamed of yourself. Ricky Henderson had 60 steals by All-Star break," and he hangs up the phone. Basically, like, he's right. You just won the stolen base crown, and like, I don't think it's worth crap. And hang up. See you later. And he loved his fellow players. Most people had really nice things to say about his energy and the kind of guy that he was, but he was a different cat, certainly one of a kind, and just a legend.
One quick Mariners story. Actually, it happened with the Mets. So John Olerud played with Ricky Henderson.
This is my other one.
In a couple of different spots, and when they re-met, first in Toronto in the early 90s, when they re-met in New York in 1999, Ricky came up to John and was like, "Yo, I played with a guy that wore a helmet in Toronto," and he's like, "Ricky, that was me." So Ricky forgot about John Olerud, and then, again, played with him in Seattle in 2000, and I actually thought that was really cool, by the way, when Ricky was traded from the Mets to the Mariners, was having a crappy season, and pretty well rebounded for Seattle in the second half. 90 games, and he played like really, really above average left field. I think he had almost a 2 WAR for that season just for Seattle. So pretty cool to see. Yes, Mariner stud Ricky Henderson.
Mariner great.
Putting up those numbers.
Franco Harris, Seahawks great. Ricky Henderson, Mariner great. When you think of those two men, you think Seattle.
I mean, you think Seattle greats, you think Ricky Henderson, you think Jerry Rice.
That's right.
You know?
Throw him in there. Who else can we steal?
And then the last one is
Gaylord Perry.
Ricky was notoriously so bad with names, addresses, and places that, like, he just got this stuff wrong all the time, and he would kind of just use his own landmarks and things for stuff. So when the club was asking where to send stuff to his house down at spring training, he'd be like, "Oh, it's just, you know, it's a block down from the stadium around the street from the 7-Eleven. And they're like, "Okay, well, like, what's your address?" He's like, "Well, it's just, I just told you where it is." And like, that doesn't really work like that. But apparently he was really bad with names, and towards the end of his career, he finished his career with the Padres. I actually skipped a pretty important baseball game to go see his last game as a pro. My dad wasn't real thrilled about that, but I'm like, I'm not going to be a pro baseball player. I'm going to get one chance to see Ricky Henderson play his last game. But apparently his Padres teammates, there are a lot of them that didn't think he knew their name. Because he would frequently just go around calling people by initials. Dennis Eckersley said, "He mostly called me E. Sometimes he called me D. Occasionally he called me B." And he said that, this is Phil Nevin, the Angels manager, former Padre, said that at one point they went up to Ricky and told him they'd give him $100 for every teammate he could name. And Ricky just looked at him right in the eye and said, "F you, Phil," and walked away.
I love Ricky.
He didn't have any of them.
He's got a little bit of Manny Ramirez. I guess Manny has a little bit of Ricky.
That is 100% true. That is who I think of. I mean, the Olerud story you tell, I played baseball for a coach who coached Manny Ramirez in the Bronx growing up after he'd come over and coached him in high school. And the Manny stories are all true.
Manny be Manny.
And there was a time, like, Manny Ramirez, he played with Johnny Damon in Boston. And then Johnny Damon went over to the Yankees. And because of the Yankees clean cut thing, like, cut his hair. He didn't have like the long, you know, kind of wild man thing going and the beard. So clean shaven, no long hair. And then Manny saw him like, you know, at a game, I think the Red Sox were at Yankee Stadium, whatever. And Johnny said, "What's up?" And Manny introduced himself, and he's like, "Manny, we played together. I just cut my hair, man. It's not even, it's me. It's Johnny." But that was Ricky. I loved him. A guy that was an absolute game changer. One of the kind of the pioneer, the leadoff home run as well, in addition to being a great base stealer. So RIP to a legend. Ricky Henderson will be missed by the baseball world. But it's time for us to turn the page and get into the club hour. Tis the season to beat up your dad. I want to hear your Christmas traditions, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And then I found a list of the best foods in the world, the 100 best dishes. There were 11,000 of them that were nominated. They got over 320,000 votes. I'll tell you what ended up at the top of the list. We'll do it in the club coming up on 1080 The Fan.